Go back to where you're from,
Rickson said. The two eldest children seemed to be gaining strength from each other.
Take your noisy machines and go!
That's what this was about. Juliet remembered the sight of the compressor on its side, more heavily attacked maybe than Solo had been. She nodded to the two boys, had their ages pegged for 10 or 11. Go on, she told them. You're going to help me and my friend get home. We have good food there, real electricity, hot water. Get your things. The youngest girl cried out at this, a horrible peal, the same cry Juliet had heard from the dark hallway. Rickson paced back and forth, eyeing her and the wrench on the floor. Juliet slid away from him and toward the bed to comfort the young girl when she realized it wasn't her squealing. Something moved in the older girl's arms. Juliet froze at the edge of the bed. No, she whispered. Rickson took a step toward her. Stay. She aimed the point of the knife at him. He glanced down at the wound on his leg, thought better of it. The two boys froze in the act of stuffing their bags. Nothing in the room moved, save the baby squealing and fidgeting in the girl's arms. Is that a child? The girl turned her shoulders. It was a motherly gesture, but the girl couldn't be more than 15. Juliet didn't know that was possible. She wondered if that's why the implants went in so early. Her hand slid toward her hip almost as if to touch the place, to rub the bump beneath her skin.
Just go, the teenager whimpered. We've been fine without you.
Juliet put down the knife. It felt strange to relinquish it, but more wrong to have it in her hand as she approached the bed. I can help you, she said. She turned and made sure that the boy heard her. I used to work in a place that cared for newborns. Let me... She reached out her hands. The girl turned more toward the wall, shielding the child from her. Okay. Juliet held up her hands, showing her palms. But you're not going to live like this anymore. She nodded to the young boys, turned to Rickson, who hadn't moved. None of you are. This isn't how anyone should have to live their days, not even their last ones. She nodded to herself, her mind made up. Rickson, get your things together, only the necessities. We'll come back for anything else. She dipped her chin at the younger boys, saw how their coveralls had been chopped at the knees, their legs covered in grime from the farms. They took it as permission to return to packing. These two seemed eager to have someone else in charge, maybe anybody other than their brother, if that's what he was. Tell me your name. Juliet sat down on the bed with the two girls while the others rummaged through their things. She fought to remain calm, to not succumb to the nausea of kids having kids. The baby let out a hungry cry. I'm here to help you, Juliet told the girl. Can I see? Is it a girl or a boy? The young mother relaxed her arms. A blanket was folded away, revealing the squinting eyes and pursed red lips of a baby no more than a few months old. A tiny arm waved at its mother. Girl, she said softly. The younger girl, clinging to her side, peeked around the mother's ribs at Juliet. Have you given her a name? She shook her head. Not yet. Rickson said something behind her to the two boys, trying to get them not to fight over something.
My name's Elise,
the younger girl said, her head emerging from behind the other girl's side. Elise pointed at her mouth.
I have a loose tooth.
Juliet laughed. I can help you with that if you like. She took a chance and reached out to squeeze the young girl's arm. Flashes of her childhood in her father's nursery flooded back, the memories of worried parents, of precious children, of all the hopes and dreams created and dashed around that lottery. Juliet's thoughts swerved to her brother, the one who was not meant to be, and she felt the tears well up in her eyes. What had these kids been through? Solo, at least, had normal experiences from before. He knew what it meant to live in a world where one could be safe. What had these five kids, six, grown up in, seen? She felt such intense pity that there was this sick, wrong, sad desire for none of them to have ever been born. This was just as soon washed over with a wave of guilt for even considering it. "We're going to get you out of here," she told the two girls. "Gather your things." One of the young boys came over and dropped her bag nearby. He was putting things back into it, apologizing to her, when Juliet heard another strange squeak. "What now?" She dabbed her mouth on the towel, watching as the girls reluctantly did an adult's bidding, finding their things and eyeing one another to make sure this was okay. Juliet heard a rustling in her gear bag. She used the handle to separate the zippered mouth, wary of what could be living in the rat's nest these kids had created, when she heard a tiny voice calling her name. She dropped the towel and clawed through the bag, past tools and bottles of water, under her spare coveralls and loose socks, until she found the radio. She wondered how Solo could possibly be calling her. The other set had been ruined in her suit.
"Please say something,"
the radio hissed.
"Juliet, are you there? It's Walker. Please, for God's sake, answer me."
Silo 18.
"What happened? Why aren't they responding?"
Courtney looked from Walker to Shirley as if either of them could know.
"Is it broken?"
Shirley picked up the small dial with the painted marks and tried to tell if it had accidentally moved.
"Walk, did we break it?"
"No, it's still on," he said.
He held the headphones up by his cheek, his eyes drifting over the various components.
"Guys, I don't know how much longer we have."
Courtney was watching the scene in the generator room through the observation window. Shirley stood up and peered out over the control panel toward the main entrance. Jenks and some of his men were inside, rifles pinned against their shoulders, yelling at the others. The soundproofing made it impossible to hear what was going on.
"Hello?"
A voice crackled from Walker's hands. The words seemed to tumble through his fingers.
"Who's there?"
he called, flicking the switch.
"Who is this?"
Shirley rushed to Walker's side. She wrapped her hands around his arm, disbelieving.
"Juliet!"
she screamed. Walker held up his hand, tried to quiet her and Courtney both. His hands were trembling as he fumbled with the detonator and finally clicked the red switch.
"Jules?"
his old voice cracked. Shirley squeezed his arm.
"Is that you?"
There was a pause, and then a cry from the speakers, a sob.
"Walk? Walk, is that you? What's going on? Where are you? I thought..."
"Where is she?"
Shirley whispered. Courtney watched them both, her cheeks in her palms, mouth open. Walker hit the switch.
"Jules, where are you?"
A deep sigh hissed through the tiny speakers. Her voice was tiny and far away.
"Walk, I'm in another silo. There's more of them, you wouldn't believe."
Her voice drifted off to static. Shirley leaned against Walker while Courtney paced in front of them, looking from the radio to the window.
"We know about the others,"
Walker said, holding the mic below his beard.
"We can hear them, Jules. All of them."
He let go of the switch. Juliet's voice returned.
"How are you? Mechanical? I heard about the fighting. Are you in the middle of that?"
Before she signed off, Juliet said something to someone else, her voice barely audible. Walker raised his eyebrows at the mention of the fighting.
"Well, how would she have heard?" Shirley asked.
"I wish she were here," Courtney said. "Jules would know what to do."
"Tell her about the exhaust, about the plan." Shirley waved for the microphone. Here, let me.
Walker nodded. He handed Shirley the headset and the detonator. Shirley worked the switch. It was stiffer than she thought it'd be.
Jules, can you hear me? It's Shirley.
Shirley!
Juliet's voice wavered.
Hey, you. You hanging in there?
The emotion in her friend's voice brought tears to Shirley's eyes.
Yeah. She bobbed her head and swallowed. Hey, listen. Some of the others are routing the exhaust feed to IT's cooling vents. But remember that time we lost back pressure? I'm worried the motor might...
No!
Juliet cut her off.
You have to stop them, Shirley. Shirley, can you hear me? You have to stop them. It won't do anything. The cooling is for the servers. The only people up there who...
She cleared her throat.
Listen to me. Make them stop.
Shirley fumbled with the red switch. Walker reached over as if to help, but she finally got the device under control.
Wait, she transmitted. How do you know where the vents lead?
I just do. This place is laid out the same. God damn it, let me talk to them. You can't let them...
Shirley hit the switch again. There was a blast of sound from the generator room as Courtney threw open the door and ran outside.
Courtney's going, she said. She's going right now. Jules, how did you... Who are you with? Can they help us? It's not looking good over here.
The tiny speakers crackled again. Shirley could hear Juliet take a deep breath, could hear other voices in the background, heard her give commands or orders to some other person. Shirley thought her friend sounded exhausted, weary, sad.
There's nothing I can do,
Juliet said.
There's no one here. One man, some kids. Everyone's gone. The people who lived here, they couldn't even help themselves.
The line went silent, and then she clicked through again.
You have to stop the fighting,
she said.
Whatever it takes, please, don't let it be because of me. Please, stop.
The door opened again, Courtney returning. Shirley heard shouts in the generator room. Gunfire.
What is that?
Juliet asked.
Where are you guys?
In the control room?
Shirley looked up at Courtney, whose eyes were wide with fear. Jules, I don't think we have much time. There was so much she wanted to say. She wanted to tell her about Mark. She needed more time.
They're coming for us, was all she could think to relate. I'm glad you're okay.
The radio crackled.
Oh, God, make them stop. No more fighting. Shirley, listen to me.
It doesn't matter, Shirley said, holding the button and wiping at her cheeks. They won't stop.
The gunfire was getting closer, the pops audible through the thick door. Her people were dying while she cowered in the control room talking to a ghost. Her people were dying.
You take care of yourself, Shirley said.
Whoop!
Shirley handed the headset to Walker. She joined Courtney by the window and watched the crush of people cower on the other side of the generator, the flash and shudder of barrels leaning against the railing, someone in mechanical blue lying still on the ground. More faded pops, more distant and muted rattles.
Jules!
Walker fumbled with the radio. He shouted her name, was still trying to talk to her.
Let me talk to them!
Juliet yelled, her voice impossibly far away.
Walk, why can I hear you and not them? I need to talk to the deputies, to Peter and Hank. Walk, how did you call me? I need to talk to them.
Walker blubbered about soldering irons, about his magnifiers. The old man was crying, cradling his boards and wires and electrics as if they were a broken child, whispering to them and rocking back and forth, salt water dripping dangerously onto this thing he'd built. He babbled to Juliet while more men in blue fell, arms draped over railings, inadequate rifles dropping noiselessly to the ground. The men they had lived in terror of for a month were inside. It was over. Shirley groped for Courtney, their arms entangling, while they watched, helpless. Behind them, the sobs and mad ravings of old Walk, mixed with the jitter of deadened gunfire, a popping noise like the grumble of a machine losing its balance, sliding out of control. 24. Silo 18. Lucas teetered on the upturned trash can, the toes of his boots denting the soft plastic, feeling as if it could go flying out from under him or collapse under his weight at any moment. He steadied himself by holding the top of Server 12, the thick layer of dust up there telling him it had been years since anyone had been in there with a ladder and a rag. He pressed his nose up to the AC vent and took another whiff. The nearby door beeped, the locks clanking as they withdrew into the jam. With a soft squeal, the massive hinges budged and the heavy door swung inward. Lucas nearly lost his grip on the dusty server top as Bernard pushed his way inside. The head of IT looked up at him quizzically.
"You'll never fit," Bernard said.
He laughed as he turned to push the door shut. The locking pins clunked, the panel beeped, and a red light resumed its watch over the room. Lucas pushed away from the dusty server and leapt from the trash can, the plastic bucket flipping over and scooting across the floor. He wiped his hands together, brushed them on the seat of his pants, and forced a laugh.
I thought I smelled something, he explained. Does it look smoky in here to you?
Bernard squinted at the air.
It always seems hazy in here to me, and I don't smell anything, just hot servers.
He reached into his breast pocket and brought out a few folded pieces of paper.
Here, letters from your mother. I told her to port them to me and I'd pass them along.
Lucas smiled, embarrassed, and accepted them. I still think you should ask about... He glanced up at the AC vent and realized there was no one in Mechanical 2 ask. The last that he'd heard from the radio below was that Sims and the others were mopping up. Dozens were dead. 3 to 4 times that many were in custody. Apartment wings were being prepped in the mids to hold them all. It sounded like there would be enough people to clean for years.
I'll have one of the replacement mechanics look into it, Bernard promised. Which reminds me, I'd like to go over some of that with you. There's going to be a massive shift from green to blue as we push farmers into mechanical. I was wondering what you think of Sammy heading up the entire division down there.
Lucas nodded as he skimmed one of the letters from his mother.
Sammy is head of mechanical? I think he's overqualified, but perfect. I've learned a lot from him.
He glanced up as Bernard opened the filing cabinet by the door and flipped through the work orders.
He's a great teacher, but would it be permanent?
Nothing's permanent.
Bernard found what he was looking for and tucked it into his breast pocket.
You need anything else?
He pressed his glasses up his nose. Lucas thought he looked older from the past month. Older and worn down.
Dinner'll be sent over in a few hours.
Lucas did have something he wanted. He wanted to say that he was ready, that he had sufficiently absorbed the horror of his future job, had learned what he needed without going insane. Now could he please go home? But that wasn't the way out of there. Lucas had sorted this out for himself.
Well, he said, I wouldn't mind some more reading material.
The things he had discovered in Server 18 burned in his brain. He feared Bernard would be able to read them there. Lucas thought he knew, but he needed to ask for that folder in order to be sure. Bernard smiled.
Don't you have enough to read?
Lucas fanned the letters from his mother.
These? Oh, they'll keep me busy for the walk to the ladder.
I meant what you have below. The order. Your studies.
Bernard tilted his head. Lucas let out a sigh.
Yeah, I do, but I can't be expected to read that 12 hours a day. I'm talking about something less dense.
He shook his head. Hey, forget it. If you can't... Bernard waved his hand.
What do you need? I'm just giving you a hard time.
He leaned against the filing cabinet and interlocked his fingers across his belly. He peered at Lucas through the bottoms of his glasses.
Well, this might sound weird, but it's this case. An old case. The server says it's filed away in your office with all those closed investigations.
An investigation?
Bernard's voice rose quizzically. Lucas nodded. Yeah, a friend of a friend thing. I'm just curious how it was resolved. There aren't any digital copies on the serv.
This isn't about Holston, is it?
Who? Oh, the old sheriff? No, no, why?
Bernard waved his hand to dismiss the thought.
The file is under Wilkins, Lucas said, watching Bernard closely. George Wilkins?
Bernard's face hardened. His mustache dropped down over his lips like a lowered curtain. Lucas cleared his throat. What he'd seen on Bernard's face was nearly enough.
George died a few years ago down in Mc... he started to say.
I know how he died.
Bernard dipped his chin.
Why would you want to see that file?
Just curious. I have a friend who...
What's this friend's name?
Bernard's small hands slid off his belly and were tucked into his coveralls. He moved away from the filing cabinet and took a step closer. What?
This friend. Was he involved with George in any way? How close of a friend was he?
No, not that I know of. Look, if it's a big deal, don't worry about.
Lucas wanted to simply ask, to ask why he'd done it. But Bernard seemed intent on telling him with no prompting at all.
It's a very big deal,
Bernard said.
George Wilkins was a dangerous man, a man of ideas, the kind we catch in whispers, the kind who poisons the people around him.
What? What do you mean?
Section 13 of the Order. Study it. All insurrections would start right there if we let them. Start with men like him.
Bernard's chin had lowered to his chest, his eyes peering over the rims of his glasses, the truth coming freely without all the deceit Lucas had planned. Lucas never needed that folder. He had found the travelogues that coincided with George's death, the dozens of wires asking Holston to wrap things up. But now he saw he never needed to ask for the folder at all. There was no shame in Bernard. George Wilkins hadn't died. He'd been murdered. And Bernard was willing to tell him why.
What did he do? Lucas asked quietly.
I'll tell you what he did. He was a mechanic, a greaser. We started hearing chatter from the porters about these plans circulating, ideas for expanding the mine, doing a lateral dig. As you know, lateral digs are forbidden.
Yeah, obviously. Lucas had a mental image of miners from Silo 18 pushing through and meeting miners from Silo 19. It would be awkward, to say the least.
A long chat with the old head of mechanical put an end to that nonsense, and then George Wilkins came up with the idea of expanding downward. He and some others drew up schematics for a level 150, and then a level 160.
12 more levels?
To begin with, that was the talk anyway, just whispers and sketches. But some of these whispers landed in a porter's ear, and then ours perked up.
So you killed him?
Someone did, yes. It doesn't matter who.
Bernard adjusted his glasses with one hand. The other stayed in the belly of his coveralls.
You'll have to do these things one day, son. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, but...
No buts.
Bernard shook his head slowly.
Some men are like a virus. Unless you want to see a plague break out, you inoculate the silo against them. You remove them.
Lucas remained silent.
We've removed 14 threats this year, Lucas. Do you have any idea what the average life expectancy would be if we weren't proactive about these things?
But the cleanings?
Useful for dealing with the people who want out, who dream of a better world. This uprising we're having right now is full of people like that, but it's just one sort of sickness we deal with. The cleaning is one sort of cure. I'm not sure if someone with a different illness would even clean if we sent them out there. They have to want to see what we show them for it to work.
This reminded Lucas of what he'd learned of the helmets, the visors. He had assumed this was the only kind of sickness there was. He was beginning to wish he'd read more of the Order and less of the Legacy.
You've heard this latest outbreak on the radio. All of this could have been prevented if we'd caught the sickness earlier. Tell me that wouldn't have been better.
Lucas looked down at his boots. The trash can lay nearby on its side. It looked sad, like that. No longer useful for holding things.
Ideas are contagious, Lucas. This is basic Order material. You know this stuff.
He nodded. He thought of Juliet, wondered why she hadn't called in forever. She was one of these viruses Bernard was talking about. Her words creeping in his mind and infecting him with outlandish dreams. He felt his entire body flush with heat as he realized he'd caught some of it too. He wanted to touch his breast pocket, feel the lumps of her personal effects there, the watch, the ring, the ID. He had taken them to remember her in death, but they had become even more precious knowing that she was still alive.
This uprising hasn't been nearly as bad as the last one, Bernard told him. And even after that one, things were eventually smoothed over. The damage welded back together, the people made to forget. This same thing will happen here. Are we clear?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Now, is that all you wish to know from this folder?
Lucas nodded.
Good. It sounds like you need to be reading something else, anyway.
His mustache twitched with half a smile. Bernard turned to go. It was you, wasn't it? Bernard stopped, but didn't turn to face him. They killed George Wilkins? It was you, right?
Does it matter?
Yeah, it matters to me. It means...
Or to your friend.
Bernard turned to face him. Lucas felt the temperature in the room go up yet another notch.
Are you having second thoughts, son, about this job? Was I wrong about you? Because I've been wrong before.
Lucas swallowed. I just want to know if it's something I'd ever have to... I mean, since I'm shadowing for... Bernard took a few steps toward him. Lucas felt himself back up half a step in response.
I didn't think I was wrong about you, but I was, wasn't I?
Bernard shook his head. He looked disgusted.
God damn it,
he spat. No, sir, you weren't. I think I've just been in here too long. Lucas brushed his hair off his forehead. His scalp was itchy. He needed to use the bathroom. Maybe I just need some air, you know? Go home for a while, sleep in my bed? What's it been, a month? How long do I need?
You want out of here?
Lucas nodded. Bernard peered down at his boots and seemed to consider this a while. When he looked up, there was sadness in his eyes, in the droop of his mustache, across the wet film of his eyes.
Is that what you want? To get out of here.
He adjusted his hands inside his coveralls. Yes, sir, Lucas nodded.
Say it.
I want out of here. Lucas glanced at the heavy steel door behind Bernard. Please, I want you to let me out.